Want access to search and listen to the entire webmasterradio.fm archive of over 1,500 podcasts commercial-free? Just become a webmasterradio.fm elite member for less than 99 cents a day. Otherwise, the last 60 days of content are on the house. Webmasterradio.fm. We're everywhere.
Don't be fooled by your web analytics. If you think your web analytics are giving you all the information needed to manage your paid search accounts, you'd be shocked to see what they're not telling you. How are you tracking sales received over the phone that resulted from your PPC ads? Now, you can track call-in sales by campaign, search engine, and keyword with Engine Ready Call Analytics. Optimize top spending keywords with more accurate tracking and achieve higher PPC profitability. Get started now tracking your PPC call-in sales with Engine Ready Call Analytics. Visit EngineReady.com to see how easy and inexpensive accurate call-in tracking can be. EngineReady.com.
Your virtual webmaster frat house.
Webmasterradio.fm. Hey, bring your togas.
Webmasterradio.fm.
Thanks for listening. Webmasterradio.fm. We're everywhere.
Feeling better? Looking better. Making life better. It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Welcome your hosts, Byron White and Amanda Smith.
Welcome, everybody, to the Life Tips Show. Amanda, how are you today?
I am so good. I'm better than usual, Byron.
You know, I've never known you in a day that things were not so good or so great or so rosy. So thanks for all the bright sunshine you bring to our day. Tell us about our guest today, Chris McGibbon.
So our guest today is all about fish, and I know you love fishing, so this is right up your alley. So he's actually a fish biologist for the Southern California Department of Fish and Wild Game. And he's actually going to talk to us a little bit more about some of the water quality issues that we're seeing nationwide, some of the issues we're seeing with fishing and camping, especially going into the camping season. I think that this is a good time to start talking about things of this nature.
Can't wait. We'll chat with him in a minute, but I want to start our debut with bringing a few tips to the table. I've got a few for you.
Okay.
Now, I'm sure you have a couple as well. Do you want to go first?
Well, I have a great tip on the proper way to put out a campfire, which is very serious. I mean, a lot of the forest fires that we're seeing in the past few years are actually due to people improperly putting out campfires. So tips on the proper way to douse a campfire is very important. But funny story, while I was looking for this tip, I actually found right on our Life Tips site a great tip on the proper way to go to the bathroom in the woods. So I'll tell you, Byron, there is nothing that you can't find a tip on our tip site, let me tell you.
Can't wait to hear more about that.
You know what? I'm not even going to give that one out.
Our listeners
can actually go right to lifetips.com to find out that one. But the proper way to douse a campfire, actually, a lot of people assume that once you stop seeing the embers burning, that it's out. There's actually a proper way. You need to turn the soil with the embers until that's completely covered and mixed up. Once it's had about an hour to cool off, then you want to douse it with water and wait until the steam has completely settled. Move any loose debris and leaves away from the area and wait an additional hour until the steam has completely cooled off before leaving your camp spot.
Great tip. Well, here's my quick tip, and then we'll get on with our guest. Fly fishing. It's an art. It's a science. It's tough to put it together, but fly fishing is truly one of the most exciting sports, in my opinion, save, you know, radical things like motocross riding and other stuff that's crazy that we'll talk more about later. But the trick with learning how to fly fish and learning the art is something that I'm certain you're going to be able to remember. 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, okay? When you're pulling the fly out of the water, by the way, tip number one, cover your fly with tape, probably duct tape in your case, Amanda. And so when you're practicing, you're not flying around. You want to certainly wear protective glasses and a hat. In your case, metal armor would be good. But as you're learning to fly fish, you're going to want to pick the fly up very quickly and bring your rod back to a 2 o'clock position. And then as the fly comes all the way back, you'll feel the tension in the end. When it reaches the end point, you're going to cast it out to 2 o'clock, whereupon you're going to come back to 2 o'clock, back to 10 o'clock, back to 2 o'clock, and then make your cast again. So 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock is my tip for everybody today. But let's bring on Chris that can straighten us out with probably fishing problems much better than that. Chris, welcome to the show today.
Hi, thank you.
So aside from the 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock and campfire trip, tell us a little bit about your role as a fisheries biologist with Southern California Wildlife, Fish, and Game. Tell us about what you're doing out there and really what's going on.
Yeah, like you said, I'm a fisheries biologist. I'm a state employee, and I basically monitor Southern California's waters for specifically trout and trout populations and the water quality associated with maintaining healthy populations of trout. And then after that, I kind of like to encourage people to get out in the woods and go and experience the trout opportunities that California provides.
Tell us a little bit about the situation out there. How have things changed? How long have you worked for the state in this role? And tell us about some of the radical change you've seen. I know it was a big drought out this year, but tell us what's going on from your perspective.
Well, I've kind of bounced around the state all my life, but I've been employed by the state now for about 5 years, and recently I moved to Southern California to pick up this job. And so I've been down here for about just under 2 years, and it just so happens it's been two of the worst years of drought Southern California has ever seen. So I showed up onto the scene with little to no water in a lot of the areas where trout used to persist, and a lot of the populations were seeing drought conditions, which led to a lot of die-offs. And that was really unfortunate, but that was due to mostly weather. There was some human-caused interference as well, such as reservoirs mostly due to weather, really.
What about acid rain?
I get out and... Oh, I'm sorry.
No. What about acid rain, other problems you're seeing? I mean, the drought... Well, talk with me about acid rain as well. I mean, with less water to work with, isn't acidic rain also becoming a problem, or are fish like trout sort of immune to those problems?
Well, I wouldn't say acid rain is a huge influence. What happens is we've had some fires that have come through in the past 2 years, and with little to no rain, you don't really get a flushing effect that flushes out the systems with in regards to ash that falls into the water. And so, no rain. There's an accumulation of poor water quality, and over time that will affect a population negatively. Acid rain isn't too much of an issue for trout, as in that trout are fairly tolerable to different ranges of pH. But other populations could be affected by changes in acidity.
What effect is lack of water having? Is it, is it less food, therefore more fish are dying? Is it affecting breeding? Is it, give me a flavor for what's happening in the ecosystem there.
Well, it's just about all of the above, really. less water means less habitat. Less habitat means less food availability. It also means that the fish aren't able to really select their preferred habitat. An individual's preferred habitat might be kind of constricted to something they're not so comfortable in, and then eventually that leads to stress, and fish die pretty quickly once they start to get stressed.
What percentage of the brooks and streams and areas where you'd find brook trout, particularly, and some of the wonderful fish that you can catch, what percentage of those, because of the drought, have just are gone, just like boom?
Well, we don't actually have brook trout in this area. We deal mostly with rainbow trout. And rainbow trout are actually, for the most part, native to Southern California. Lots of the creeks that we have here They are native fish. A lot of times they've become wild, and that's due to people transplanting fish, which we can talk about later. But rainbow trout is fairly persistent. I mean, it evolved in this area, so it's able to come back. Just what tends to happen is once humans interfere, I might say, with a population that's trying to come back, they might just kind of push it over the edge, and then it no longer exists. Percentage-wise, I would say that pretty much everything was negatively affected in this area due to the past years of drought. But I couldn't really give you a solid percentage. I would definitely say everything's been affected, though.
Mandy, couple questions?
Oh, yeah. Let's go. So, Chris, when I spoke to you earlier today, we talked about how you're having some bullfrog problems. I didn't realize that bullfrogs were kind of the jerks of the aquatic world. I know you're having some problems with some non-native species. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I would also say, I'm glad you brought that up. Non-natives are really kind of one of the biggest problems that I deal with. And non-natives are directly related to, humans' transport. I mean, they didn't get there by themselves, otherwise they would be natives. And so what's happened is species like the bullfrog there's others out there too, but the bullfrog specifically, it really is the bully. It pretty much eats everything from bats to birds to small mammals to fish to snakes, and so it's a predator that's been introduced, and a lot of systems really just can't handle the extra pressure that's brought on by this particular type of predator, and so along with 2 years of drought, a system might not handle having a non-native predator like that so well. So that's an issue. Non-natives also in the form of plants. Plants come in, and particular plants from other parts of the world might have adapted to take up water from further down in the soil and substrate. And so they come in and they soak up the entire aquifer, and that actually will end up causing artificial drought for the native plants in the area, and so that can be really bad too, because we see that in wetlands quite often, and wetlands are really the lifeblood for multiple bird species, so you get this artificial drought really created by non-native plants.
Well, now, how did non-native species end up here? Like, who can we blame for this? Because I will write them a strongly worded letter, I swear.
Well, there's a lot of point sources. Let's see where to even begin. A lot of non-natives have traveled over, tend to get out and get around on livestock animals. That's how grasses get introduced, either through being carried through by the digestive system and then being released in different areas, or just seed pods get caught on coats and come over on the animal's hide. A lot of it also is big ships that come over, cargo ships that come over, and they drop their bilge when they hit different ports. And then so all of a sudden you have non-native crab species introduced from California that was initially from China. That's actually one huge problem we're seeing in the Sacramento Central Valley, and that is that we have non-native crabs that have been introduced, as well as mussels and snails from across the world, and they're now kind of just taking over California slowly but surely.
Really? This is not... That's a problem that I just really didn't take into consideration. I mean, I know you guys are facing a lot of different problems with all the droughts and, normal pollution problems, but, non-native species, who would have thought?
Yeah, non-natives are really one of our biggest problems.
So what do you do with, for example, what do you do about the bullfrogs?
Well, there's lots of ways people can get involved. One way is just talking to your local biologist like myself, and I can recommend different nonprofits that go out and they do non-native species removal, not so much really bullfrogs, but with plants. There's whole watersheds that have been affected by non-native species, and people get out grassroots style, go out and rip up plants that they know and have identified to be harmful. This is more important in some watersheds with some plants than others, but that's a good way to get started. A lot of times agencies will put kind of like a bounty out on non-natives, and there'll be it doesn't happen.
So there's like a bounty out on bullfrogs.
It can be that way. It happens
really?
Sometimes with non-native fish species, yeah. Not right now, not in Southern California, but I know up in Oregon they have something like that on the Colorado with a particular fish species. And there's or incentive, such as come and catch all of them you want and you can keep as many as you want. If it's a problematic species, that's what fisheries management tries to, kind of come up with new ways to battle non-native sometimes.
Well, you know what, Chris? We're going to take a break for just 1 minute, and then when we come back, we're going to finish up our interview with you and talk some more fish tips, okay? We'll be right back.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
The Web Marketing Association is now accepting entries for the 2008 Web Marketing Awards. The Web Marketing Awards recognizes the best websites from nearly 100 industries. Web Marketing Awards winners receive an image plaque, certificate of achievement, higher visibility for your company, valuable feedback from our expert judges, links to your site from the highly ranked Web Awards site, and a press release from PR Web. Visit www.webaward.org to nominate your company, site, or organization. Hurry, deadline for entries is May 31st, 2008. It's the Web Marketing Association's 12th Annual International Web Marketing Awards. Go to www.webaward.org. Sign up today.
Need help improving your PPC campaigns? Tired of spending all your time swamped with spreadsheets and manual updates? Turn to Adapt SEM software to optimize your campaigns and to reach your goals. Adapt SEM is one of the most affordable and reliable tools on the market for improving PPC campaigns. Adapt SEM not only optimizes your bids, but also gives you keyword suggestions, competitive research, and helps to test ads, all in one place at flat rate pricing and no long-term commitments. Learn how Adapt SEM can help manage your PPC campaigns better. Check out our free webinar at adapt.com/webmasterradio. Sign up now for a free personal tour. adapt.com/webmasterradio.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Chris McGivin, a fabulous state employee of the state of California that's helping us to keep our trout possibilities of alive here. Welcome back, Chris.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks for being on the show today. So, are fish getting smaller or fewer in California?
I'd say they're probably staying the same size, fewer potentially. We had a really good rain year this year, where we most of California actually had a really good rain year and good snowpack in the high elevations, which overall is good for fisheries populations. So I'm looking, and when I go out in the hills and stuff, I've seen pretty much most populations reproducing pretty well this spring, and that's really encouraging. If it's a native population, I kind of expect it to come back, because like I said, it evolved, and I'm sure it's seen worse droughts. California probably has seen worse droughts. Just because our records don't show it doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but I expect the native populations to do fairly well this year. Non-native populations, well, if they don't handle drought all that well, or they thrive on it and then see a lot of water the next year and for whatever reason don't thrive on that, well, that's just well, too bad for those non-natives.
For the Californians out there, any hot fishing spots that you recommend that you see in your trout scope, that of the places you recommend to fish?
There's a lot of places out here. That's kind of one of the cool things about California, and that's there's pretty much fish everywhere. But locally or regionally, we have several reservoirs that pretty much are dedicated to fishing. So most reservoirs down here have great sunfish fisheries, say bass or bluegill, stuff like that. A lot of the rivers down here we actually have dedicated to catch and release or artificial barbless lures, which is easier on the fish, and in regards to putting them back, and that keeps a consistent fishery. You know, if you don't take fish out, then they're there for the next person to come along and enjoy. And actually, a really good place to start would be the California, the State of California webpage. If you were to go to Fish and Game and start perusing the site, we actually have listed great places and historic places to go fish, whether it's for natives or big fish or fast action fisheries. We've pretty much quantified and qualified all that type of stuff on the internet. Because I work such a huge area, I would hate to just recommend one place when there's probably dozens I could just ramble on about.
One final question from me. Tell me the day in the life of your job where fish are the focal point of your existence. What a cool job. Give me a day in the life of what you do, Chris.
That's funny. My job varies quite a bit. But I do travel quite a lot throughout the state, mostly, like you said,